Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. From the Women's March on Washington to airport demonstrations in response to the executive order on travel and immigration, protests against Donald Trump and his moves started almost immediately after he took office. Now, Republican and Democratic town hall meetings are erupting. Organized opposition is growing, and activists on the left are taking game plans from an unlikely source, the Tea Party. Up next on Point in our 100 Days Spotlight, grassroots opposition to Donald Trump. We'll talk to the Indivisible Movement and their model, the conservative Tea Party. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you tracking the resistance, and what do you think of the Tea Party model for progressives? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're joined first today from Madison, Wisconsin, by John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation and political blogger. He's been writing about progressive protests, attending events, especially in rural and red states. John Nichols, welcome to On Point.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
Suddenly, there's people protesting all over the place. What's the range of protests that you see going on right now? We saw the Women's March. We saw the incredible turnout at all these airports. Town halls now look like something quite different, at least in terms of disruption from the left, than we're accustomed to. What's the range of things going on, John?
Well, it is an incredible range, and I think it speaks to the moment we're in. A lot is changing. A lot of people are, frankly, agitated, frightened, freaked out, whatever term you want to use. And so you're seeing things happen all over the country. And obviously we're getting a lot of publicity, a lot of coverage, if you will, on what you've described, the Women's March, the airport demonstrations, these big protests in big cities. But what I would emphasize is this is going on everywhere, and it has been even from before the day that Donald Trump was inaugurated. I was in a town, Elkhorn, Wisconsin, 10,000. The night before Trump was inaugurated, there's a big crowd of people out protesting. They had their resist signs. They were, in the street marching to the county courthouse. Now, they also had people driving by booing him. So, you know, this was in a county that voted for Donald Trump. And so it's important to understand that there's an awful lot of people who feel it is important to step up and make their statement. And they've been looking for vehicles to do it. Marching through the streets of Elkhorn is one thing to do. But, boy, when members of Congress come home to their districts, because the Trump administration seems, I think, for an awful lot of people, so hard to reach, so hard to contact directly, the member of Congress becomes a target, if you will, a way to communicate all this angst, all this fury. It's not new. You're right, Tom, that we saw some of this with the Tea Party, but I would even trace it back to the early days of George Herbert Walker Bush's presidency. And people with a long memory will remember that there was some talk about insurance issues, retirement issues, Medicaid, Medicare, some of these things. Dan Rostenkowski and others began to open up the possibility of some changes in rules. And the protests at those town meetings back in 1989 were really powerful. They were overwhelming.
John,
actually changed the course of events, and I think so. We have a long history of this.
My memory goes back not as far as that on this. I mean, I take your point, but I go back to 2009, not long after President Obama was inaugurated, and it did not take long for the Tea Party movement to start revving up back then. I mean, by the end of February, you had Tea Party rally in Washington, Chicago, other cities around the United States. You had Rick Santelli on CNBC with his outburst there. Within weeks of those first developments, we were covering it right here. Is this similar? How's it similar and how's it different, John?
Sure. Good question. Well, again, it's part of a long arc. We do have a right to assemble and petition for the redress of grievances. And people are very conscious of that, maybe more conscious at the grassroots than in the pundit class. And so I think there are similarities to what happened with Barack Obama, and that is that you had a tremendous number of people who were unsettled by the speed with which President Obama began to take major steps. And these major steps in the area of the stimulus, talking about health care reform, talking about a number of other initiatives, the auto bailout. And so you did have people step up. It was initially quite organic, and that's an important thing to understand. I went to some of those early Tea Party rallies.
Yep.
I saw the folks showing up, and the interesting thing was it was a real mix of people who were very, very deeply unsettled by the direction their nation was taking. So in that sense, there's a similarity. But I would argue that this is very different in the sense that what you're seeing now is some of these new groups coming up, like Indivisible, which are very, very sophisticated in how they communicate a structure of responses, not just going to a rally, if you will,
okay,
but very specific ways that you can communicate, and I think also a lot of outreach beyond just the base, trying to draw in folks who have become newly disturbed, newly concerned about the moment.
John, let me ask you, who's driving the bus on these protests nationally from Democrats? Are these, how much is right now just organic, and how much is organized, and is there central organization? Is it a number? Are things growing up right now? We'll talk with one of the founders of Indivisible in a moment. What's the array of groups who are coordinating here, and how important are they? How much is just organic?
Well, they'll give you better, I'm sure your guests will give you a better answer than I on some of this, but what I can tell you is I think there are three levels of things going on, and they're all important. Number one, there are groups at the national level who have sought to communicate a structure for how to respond. Now, there's always groups that do that. There's always folks saying, you know, contact your congressman.
Yeah, yeah.
But at this point, there's a lot of people who want that. And so you have this combination of some structure, some folks Indivisible and Move On, and you know, old groups like the Friends Committee on National Legislation, the Quakers, sending out messages about things happening and what you can do. But there are also a lot of grassroots things going on. I'm struck by the fact that local Democratic parties, local teachers' unions, local just grassroots groups across the country stepping up and essentially saying, you know, we got to do something. And so those are you have the national, as you talk about, you have the local folks. And then I think there's also something else that's important to recognize. We have a lot of groups in this country that have gotten increasingly sophisticated in thinking about activism, thinking about communicating with members of Congress. And they include some of our unions, which have really been hit hard in recent years. But also, we've, as a media, done a lousy job, I think, of covering the level of immigrant rights activity in this country. And so you have immigrant rights groups that really have been communicating and developing an infrastructure to deliver messages. They're stepping up. And one final group I'd throw into this, which I think is way undercovered, and that is groups that they're very concerned about separation of church and state, secular groups.
Mm.
And they're out there. They've been out there for a long time. But I think I've noticed all over the country, in very unexpected places, groups like Americans United and local chapters have really stepped up. So it really is a mix of older groups, some of these new groups that have developed, but also, you know, none of it works unless there's a lot of people out in America that want to do it.
Oh, we've seen a lot of them coming out. Last question, cold, hard analysis. Can the left, can progressives be as effective with this kind of approach as the Tea Party ultimately was, first in stymieing a lot of President Obama's agenda, which was a goal, stated goal, and then in really changing the complexion of Congress and finally the presidency itself?
Very good question. And, of course, the left is different than the right. Different approaches, different ideas for what you want. Remember, if you're a movement that says you don't want government to do things, right, that's very different than a movement that actually does want government to do things. And so different fights, different struggles. But there is simply no question that this resistance, and it's best to refer to it as a resistance, has had a profound profound effect on members of Congress.
Already? It's only been a couple of 3 weeks.
Oh, please. These are the fastest 3 weeks you've ever lived in.
Yeah.
You know that. And
fair,
I,
fair.
And I've talked to many members of Congress. Last weekend, I was out at the Congressional Progressive Caucus's retreat in Baltimore. And I was powerfully struck. I mean, there was just a different energy among a lot of these folks. They are, many of them, not all of them, are seeing themselves as connected to the protests, you know, or connected to the protests, and it is part of their duty to bring it forward. Remember, members of Congress were at many of those airport protests, Jerry Nadler from New York and others. And so I do think something is happening, but I would caution you, there is always a push and pull, as there was in the Republican Party during the Tea Party movement's rise. There's a push and pull on how much a political party and its members of Congress embrace these mobilizations, this pressure. And you will see some real answers come in the Democratic Party's decision on who it chooses as the Democratic National Committee, who it chooses as its next chairman. There's no doubt that, for instance, Keith Ellison, who's one of the candidates for chair, has been out there at these protests. He's definitely been very engaged with it. There are some other candidates who are not so, you know, who kind of walk up more of a middle line. And so we have some tests that will come quickly. But frankly, this movement has the potential, without a question, to be every bit as influential as the Tea Party.
John Nichols with The Nation, national affairs correspondent there. Thank you very much for joining us, John.
Great pleasure, Tom.
We are looking at Democrats taking a page from the Tea Party as grassroots resistance to President Trump appears to grow. Grammys last night, a bunch of digs, and then a Tribe Called Quest came out concluding its performance with a chant to resist. This is On Point.
All of you bad folks, you must go. Resist! 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 Resist!
We are the majority vote! We are the majority vote!
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Democrats taking a page from the Tea Party as grassroots resistance to President Trump shows up around the country. You may have seen it. It's been all over the place. It was right there at the Women's March in Washington the day after inauguration. Huge numbers. And then came the executive order on immigration and travel. And in Detroit? Here were residents at Detroit's Metro Airport on January 29th protesting the immigration ban. Versions of that all over the country, and just in the last week and going on right now, town hall meetings as members of Congress are on recess. Even before that began, shortly after the inauguration, dozens gathered outside California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein's office in San Francisco to protest her vote to confirm Mike Pompeo as director of the CIA.
Why Pompeo?
Republicans? Out in Utah last week, everybody saw this. Jason Chaffetz, congressman there, confronted by a huge, rowdy crowd of demonstrators at a town hall meeting in Salt Lake City suburb who wanted an overflow crowd outside to be allowed in. And earlier this month, a raucous crowd outside a town hall hosted by California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock in a Sacramento suburb. Something going on here, some of it patterned on the Tea Party. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Will the Democrats mount a Tea Party-style response to President Trump? Is it out there already? Has it begun? Are you out there marching, protesting, holding signs, going to town halls? Can Democrats sustain defiance the way the Tea Party did? Do they have the fire, the unity, the clarity of message, the discipline? What do you see going on, maybe under the banner of resistance? We'll ask the Tea Party about it, or one part of that movement. Taylor Butterwich of the Tea Party Express will join us in a few minutes. But first, with me from Washington, is Ezra Levin. He is a co-founder of the Indivisible Movement. He's from Austin, Texas, worked as a staffer for Texas Democratic Congressman Lloyd Doggett. The Indivisible Movement was taking a lot of cues from the success of the Tea Party movement. Ezra Levin, welcome to On Point. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
What are you up to? What are you trying to do?
Well, you know, our theory of change is that Donald Trump's agenda doesn't depend on Donald Trump. It depends on whether or not individual members of Congress, the two senators and your one representative, whether or not they go along with it or they resist. And so we think that constituents have enormous amounts of power to change the minds of their representatives. So what we're doing is trying to resist. And that's what really the folks on the ground who are leading this movement in amazing creative ways, that's what they're doing too.
Okay, there's a big banner, resist. What's the strategy? What tactics? How much Tea Party inheritance are you using?
So we put out a guide 7 weeks ago online that was very explicitly based on the Tea Party. We say it right up front. You know, we're progressives. Everybody who put effort into this, they're either former progressive congressional staff or other advocates. And so we disagree strongly with the Tea Party's 19th century policy ideology. We disagree with their often aggressive, sometimes violent behavior. But we give them credit for being really smart on strategy and smart on tactics. The two-pronged strategy that the Tea Party implemented was, one, very locally focused on their own members of Congress. So they looked at their two senators and their one representative, and they said, we're going to change your mind because you're our voice in Congress. You're our voice in Washington. That was smart. And then implementing that strategy was not rocket science. It was civics 101. It's going to town halls. It's going to district offices. It's flooding the lines of Capitol Hill with calls. And that works because every single member of Congress wakes up every morning thinking, how am I going to get reelected? And the answer to that question is by convincing my constituents that I'm in Washington for them. So that means they are very attuned to how constituents feel about them and how local media portrays them. And that's what gives constituents power. So the best way to resist the Trump agenda is by focusing on your voices in Congress. That's, again, your two senators and your one representative.
How much of this has to do with public presence? Again, we've probably done a dozen different hours on the Tea Party here at On Point. And very early on, after it just began to emerge, Rick Santelli on CNBC with his kind of cry from the heart and a lot of response to that. And very early, we saw public gatherings and lots of places around the country. I mean, some got kind of funky, guys carrying long arms and all the rest, but you know, there was a lot of public presence. How important was that for the Tea Party? How important is that for progressives now? We've seen big gatherings. Some seem pretty spontaneous at the airports very quickly after the executive orders on travel.
Yeah, this is spontaneous. If you go to indivisibleguide.com, you can find, put in your zip code and find a group near you. There are 7,000 local groups that have formed in the last just few weeks and registered. This is happening everywhere. We're in 99% of the congressional districts in the country. And to your question, how important is the public perception of this? How important is the media coverage? It is very easy as a member of Congress to ignore one of your constituents or even 10 of your constituents. You're probably representing 700,000 if you're a representative and maybe a few million if you're a senator. It is much, much more difficult to ignore those 10 constituents if they've got a news camera behind them. And so what we're seeing is a lot of constituents getting together and not only protesting by going to district offices or town hall events, but letting the local press know that this is happening, that they are going there to make their voice heard, and they're going to confront their representatives to make sure that that representative stands up for them in Congress. And it's attracting local press as a result.
Here's a little sound from, this was a community dinner in Providence, Rhode Island last month, and Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse there talked to protesters concerned about his support for President Trump's choice for CIA Director Mike Pompeo. They handed him a list of all Trump's cabinet nominees and asked if he would vote for them.
Secretary of Treasury, no.
Yeah.
Secretary of Labor, no.
Yeah.
Secretary of Commerce, I need to talk to him about NOAA and what he's going to do. There are big oceans issues involved.
I hear you.
It's pressure not only on Republicans, or is it primarily first on Republicans or Democrats here that you're looking for, Ezra?
That's right. So it is on both. This is, we are not an arm of the Democratic Party in the same way that I would argue, at least early on, the Tea Party was an arm of the Republican Party. We saw, we heard earlier folks outside of Dianne Feinstein's office in California yep. asking why she voted for Pompeo. Those same types of crowds were outside of Chuck Schumer's office and outside Amy Klobuchar's office. 15 members of the Democratic Party voted for Mike Pompeo, a man who slanders Muslim Americans, a man who's open to widespread surveillance of Americans, and someone who's open to torture. That was atrocious from our point of view. But the world has changed. In the 2 weeks between the vote for Mike Pompeo and the vote for Trump's Secretary of Education, someone who is similarly poorly suited for the job, zero Democrats voted for Betsy DeVos for Secretary of Education. The only thing that changed in between those two votes was massive protests at Democratic Member of Congress's offices and Republican Member of Congress's offices. And that's changed minds. So this isn't just about people being loud or people trying to make their voices heard and then going home and calling it a day. This is having an effect both on the national debate and actually on policy.
And not, of course, not just on Democrats, Republicans as well. That meeting with Jason Chaffetz in Utah last week was pretty remarkable. Here's just a little texture of that. An exchange with the crowd, big crowd, chanting loud, talking about a project he was working on with fellow Utah Republican Congressman Tom Bishop called the Public Lands Initiative. But get a sense for the feel here.
What I liked about what I was trying to do with Rob Bishop in the Public Lands Initiative. And by the way, to specifically answer your question, I have no private interest down there. I don't have land holdings. I don't have any private interest. I really don't. But what? My friends? I don't know who owns what, where. That's not... You say no, but Hold on.
Hold on. Rob Bishop, I should have said there, but you get the idea, the kind of interaction. It ended in just kind of after a while, he just had to go. Pretty tough with McClintock as well. In an interview last week with Fox and Friends, I want to ask you about this, Ezra. We had Sean Spicer, White House press secretary, said some of the people protesting President Trump's travel ban paid demonstrators, he said.
They have every right to do that, don't get me wrong, but I think that we need to call it what it is. It's not these organic uprisings that we've seen through the last several decades. You know, the Tea Party was a very organic movement. This has become a very paid AstroTurf-type movement.
Well, that seems, I mean, Ezra, you tell me, but on the face of it, that seems utterly implausible given how quickly this turned out and in so many places pretty spontaneously.
Yeah, I would laugh to hear that. It's just, it's so off base. You know, you could call it fake news or propaganda. I'm from a small town in Texas. I just call it lies. Everybody who's working on the Indivisible Project right now, not a single one of them has received a paycheck. It's been a volunteer effort the entire time. And these protests happening at the local level really are organic. And really, to throw a bone to the Tea Party, I would say early on, they were organic too. The Koch brothers eventually did come in and tried to take over the effort. But what we saw both with the Tea Party and what we're seeing now with the Indivisible Movement and the broader protests that are occurring is this is people responding to a pretty terrible agenda that's coming out of this administration and a lot of congressional overreach. You know, at this time in Barack Obama's presidency, he had signed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to save the country from the second Great Depression. So far, what we've gotten out of this administration is an attempt to ban refugees and Muslims that was ultimately knocked down, and a lot of talk and action to take away health care from 30 million Americans or to, in other ways, attack refugees, immigrants, the old, the poor, the sick. We're seeing responses to that. People don't like that. That's why there's an uprising happening in just about every congressional district in the country. If they change their ways, you'll probably see less of that.
There's policy, and we'll come to that. We talk about it all the time today. I'm really focused as well, though, on strategy and tactics, how they worked in the past in the Tea Party rise, how they are or are not working now, Indivisible and others working out there with Democrats, progressives. Ezra Levin is one of the founders of Indivisible, president of the board there right now. A lot of them out of Austin, Texas, but all over the place now. I want to go to Tea Party country. Taylor Budovich joins us from Sacramento, California, executive director of the national group, the Tea Party Express. Taylor Budovich, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You've been around this track. You had great success. The Tea Party had great success in impacting policy, what it would be, what it wouldn't be. Great success with congressional elections in the midterms and beyond. What do you think of progressives looking to use some of that playbook, Taylor?
Well, from the start, we always believe that in order to change the policies, you have to first change the players. So the central driving force, which has already been misunderstood in both the previous analysis, is that the Tea Party was merely a protest movement. And it wasn't. It started as a protest movement, but so did the Occupy movement. So did Bernie Bros.
Okay.
The gun control lobby. Those were all protest movements that never evolved or succeeded at actually achieving anything, unlike the Tea Party that has had success across the country in redefining and remaking up the makeup of Congress and now the White House.
Fair enough, but it started with people just mailing teabags to their congressmen. I mean, and then we did see them in the streets. We did shows on it when it was emerging. I mean, there was certainly a protest face to it. What's the evolution you saw, Taylor?
So you're exactly right, and I would concede that, and like I did, the Tea Party started out in a similar way that these anti-Trump protests have started out as a protest movement. But we saw in, I would say, the coming of age for the Tea Party was in January of 2010.
About a year after it got going. So a year later, and what are you pointing to there?
Correct. And so the late Senator Ted Kennedy passed away and left an open seat. There was a special election to fill that vacancy in deep blue Massachusetts, hadn't elected a Republican in 40 years.
Yep.
And here comes Scott Brown and the Tea Party wave to have its first electoral success. And we prove that if we could win in Massachusetts, we can win nationally. And that's
shocked
what we went
a lot
to
of
do.
Progressives right there. Ted Kennedy's seat going to a Republican. Shocking to many progressives there. But you did it.
Exactly. But and it's kind of funny, and to comment on John's point prior, that this anti-Trump movement has already had a profound impact is, I mean, with all due respect, laughable. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks and they haven't stopped a single Trump cabinet appointee. I mean, President Obama even had to withdraw support and the nominations of two cabinet appointees. So this profound impact that this movement has already had is laughable. They've succeeded
at protesting. We'll see. I grant you.
I
mean, it was a year until Scott Brown won that Ted Kennedy seat. So a little time frame there. But I grant you, I want to look at that. As you look back on the Tea Party's emergence, how did it begin to take on more teeth, Taylor? What was elemental to that?
The focus, I think, was that Scott Brown victory. You know, the protests went throughout 2009 and up through the initial passage of Obamacare in the Senate on Christmas Eve night. It was a rush through on Christmas Eve night, and voters finally were tired, and they saw the election in Massachusetts as an opportunity to stop an agenda that voters largely disagreed with.
How'd you make that real? How did you give that teeth tactically?
Tactically, we got involved in an election. We got involved in the Scott Brown race. As an organization, we brought, I mean, as the story goes, Scott Brown was a long shot candidate, to say at least. But as the race became nationalized, we started airing ads nationally in support of Scott Brown. Checks started flying in. The grassroots groundswell from across the nation funneled into Massachusetts. There is activists driving thousands of miles to go volunteer in Massachusetts. And so it was that engagement in elections that I think these anti-Trump protests and this movement is going to struggle at actually achieving.
Let me ask Ezra Levin. We just got a minute before the break. Ezra, can you get there? Can you go there from the left as Taylor and his crowd did from the right?
Yeah. So and love hearing from Taylor. It's really great to hear that kind of expertise on what worked for the Tea Party. I will say it is pretty clear that the current movement has had a big impact. On literally the first day of this Congress, the Republicans in the House tried to gut the Congressional Ethics Office. They backed off of that not because they found Jesus and they decided that an objective Congressional Ethics Office was a good idea on their own. They backed off because there was massive blowback from their constituents. They heard from calls. They heard on from office visits that they didn't want.
that one. Fair enough.
But that wasn't an anti-Trump. That wasn't because of the anti-Trump movement. That was across the board. I mean, I think Tea Party activists were just as displeased with that as anyone. So I mean,
absolutely.
I don't think you can credit yourself with that.
We're going to come back.
Oh, I don't credit myself with anything. I think there's an organic movement that's pushing back, and I would say it's not just Democrats. We have Republicans leading Indivisible Movement too. I would also point out the ACA, Obamacare, has not been repealed. Republicans have been running on this for 6 years. They have the House, they have the Senate, they have the presidency. It hasn't happened. Why not? Because there have been massive protests against the idea of eliminating health care for 32 million Americans.
We're going to come back and look at the tactics, the strategy, what's going on with, you might call it, the resistance to Donald Trump. There was the Tea Party before resisting Barack Obama. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about Democrats, progressives taking a page from the Tea Party as grassroots resistance to President Trump swirls, grows. Is that you? Are you out there marching, protesting? Is it good for the country if Democrats go full Tea Party here against President Trump? If both parties go down that path of full-on resistance when the other is in power? And Tea Party members, what do you think of progressives picking up your playbook? Ezra Levin is with us. He's president of the board of the grassroots organization Indivisible, one of the group's co-founders. They are pushing back against the Trump agenda. There's a lot going on. You've seen it in the streets and beyond. Taylor Butterwich is with us from Sacramento, California, executive director of the Tea Party Express national group with a big track record you can look at now since very early about this time for the Tea Party movement broadly in the Obama years. We saw the Women's March. We saw what happened in airports all over the country after the immigration executive order came down. And then town halls began to really see turnouts, some of them getting pretty hot after a town hall meeting in Sacramento, the suburb of Roseville, earlier this month. California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock left with a police escort. He later told KCRA television he heard the concerns, but he wishes that they'd been a little more civil, he said.
There is a intolerance in the political left that is running very deep. The fact that the police had to intervene is a serious indication of a growing violent streak within the left. This is very disturbing. But I will also say I think most of the people there were decent, concerned citizens. And I'm glad that they came to express their views because, again, that's the way our country works.
Okay, yeah, things can get hot. They were hot in early Tea Party days as well. Intolerance, I don't know, I mean, on the campaign trail, here was then Donald Trump. This is about a year ago in Las Vegas, told the crowd what he would do with a man disrupting one of his events.
I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. I'd like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Okay. All kinds of intolerance. Peggy in Round Rock, Texas. Peggy, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Ezra Levin and Taylor Butterwich.
Hi, this is just a statement of this being an organic moment for many people. I started what I called my personal resistance the day that Trump was elected. I decided my first act of resistance would be to bite the bullet, get solar panels. I determined that every day I would make some step, and one was emails. Then I started writing at least a postcard every day. I got really concerned about the Muslim, not Muslim band, right? I got concerned about that. I went to John Carter's office, told him I was his representative, that I was worried about my neighbor who was going to make a trip back to her home country. And the person behind the desk did not even know about the threat of a non-Muslim ban.
Peggy, do you see yourself as a Tea Party-style protester or not?
I think I'm going that direction. I went to a prayer vigil that someone told me about. Then I went to a postcard party in Austin, which is nearby,
yep.
And I have now signed up for Common Cause, and I'm about to join Indivisible.
You got a personal resistance going right there. Peggy, it's good to hear an engaged citizen, and I appreciate your call very much. I want to get more perspective. Darius in Buffalo, New York. Darius, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think it's natural for the resistance movement to take advice from the Tea Party, because what's being done to them is exactly what was done to the Tea Party back when the Tea Party first came out. I remember when the Tea Party first came out, I remember thinking, these are a bunch of racist bigots. But the problem is, in prior military, I know a lot of friends who were actual Tea Party, and they were intelligent. And through time, I realized that what was shown on social media was meant to portray people as dumb. So you see that now with liberal peers and, you know, delegitimization of the Women's March. And the catch is, the weaponization that the other side has learned is now celebrities can't talk or journalists can't talk, because why? It's not your job to be political. But yet when people like Mike Rowe talk, even if he is right in some of his views, it's okay for him to talk because that's the view that that side wants to.
Do you think it'll work for progressives, Darius, this approach?
I think it will, because I think the catch is calling your congressman, talking to them, even if they hang up on you. So many calls reminds them that, hey, these are people, these are actual votes that I need to stay in office. And it's not just social media echo chambers. It's not just the news showing people. These people actually exist.
Get out there, says Darius in Buffalo. I appreciate your call as well. Ezra Levin, Taylor Butovich, please stand by. Vanessa Williamson joins us right now. She's at the Brookings Institution, fellow in governance studies there, co-author of the 2013 book, The Tea Party and the Remaking of Republican Conservatism. Vanessa Williamson, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Can progressives ride a Tea Party playbook to success, Vanessa?
Well, I think you're already seeing a remarkable usage of some of the tactics that were most popular with the Tea Party, especially in their early months and years, you know, this reaching out to congressmen and really making their voices heard in these very visible public protests. But I think the question, and I don't think anyone can answer it yet, is whether that has the kind of staying power that wins elections. And that, I think, is going to be the challenge. And I think that, you know, I think people on the left are aware that that's a challenge ahead of them. But the
question
is
whether that... What's the difference between them and the Tea Party? And let's say indivisible
well,
and the Tea Party.
Well, I think the most obvious difference, and sort of I'm not sure about Indivisible in particular, but okay. certainly the anti-Trump protests more broadly, is that they're larger than the Tea Party and they organized faster. At this point in 2009, Tea Party protests were very small indeed, right? It's only in the summer that you start to see the very common town halls. It's only in that fall that you get the larger protests, and even the biggest protests of the Tea Party weren't as large as the Women's March by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I mean, Hillary Clinton, I suppose, could be the first to tell you that having the most people does not mean winning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question is converting this really remarkable level of early civic engagement that you're seeing on the left right now into victories at the polling places.
What makes you think it might happen? What makes you think it might not?
Well, I think it's clear that on the left, there's been a real effort to study what was successful for the right recently. And I think that's, you know, tactical creativity is a really important part of any social movement. I think there's a little bit of a challenge, too, because there's some things about the conservative side that are a little different from the left. One is that on the conservative side, there's a sort of media environment that's really almost universal. So the viewership of Fox News, listening to conservative talk radio, really gets shared messages, kind of a shared narrative, and, you know, sort of mobilizing information to conservatives really quickly. And there's kind of a national venue in which conservatives can sort of share information that way. And on the left, I think the media environment's a lot more scattered, so it's a little bit harder in that regard. The other piece, I think, is that on the right, there was a very concerted effort of groups like Tea Party Patriots, Americans for Prosperity, to recognize this grassroots energy in the early Tea Party days and channel it into policy victories, right, through polling places and also, you know, just getting legislation moving forward.
Yeah,
in state
as Taylor was saying here, progressives cannot do the same or would not? What?
Well, I mean, it's much too early to say, obviously. I mean, you know, there have been, I think actually, and I think Ezra's right to say that there have already been some impressive moves at the federal level. But in terms of retaking the state legislatures, that just takes time. And it's far too early to say. And the question is whether the kind of groups on the right identified the Tea Party moment as a time that, you know, as an opportunity, whether on the left we're going to see that same level of organization. Because, it can't just be grassroots energy. There's always a need for organization. And so it's just, I think, too early to say whether that's going to happen. But the amount of energy is really striking.
Ezra, Taylor, I'll bring that to you. A couple of callers first. Gene in Stanton, Virginia. Gene, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to say that the young people of this country are not being given the respect that they deserve for their degree of involvement in these marches and these progressive campaigns. The young people that I know, and I know quite a few, and in spite of the fact that I'm elderly myself, are very much aware that they felt cheated, that Bernie Sanders was not the nominee for the Democratic Party.
Yep.
And they, due to that disappointment, many of them didn't vote, but they now see that with a congressional election coming up in 2 years, and this is what people are talking about around here, is that on the local level, we have to be very much aware of what's going on in our state house, in the governor's election, in the fact that the delegates in Virginia, and I'm sure it's happening everywhere else, are making every effort to gerrymander districts and ensure Republican candidates get an advantage in the next congressional election.
Gene, progressives, as you probably know, progressives are starting from way behind at the state and local level here. Big Republican predominance there right now. What do you think of that?
We may be starting from behind, but we're moving pretty fast. There are local organizations right here that are conducting marches. They're conducting, more importantly, efforts to contact our congressmen. In fact, our local congressman, Bob Goodlatte, has not been seen in this district at a community meeting since 2013. And that makes a lot of people mad. And we're getting the idea that the Republican members of Congress are afraid to face their constituents.
Well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see who's afraid. I mean, Jason Chaffetz is right there for an hour or so before he gave it up in Utah. But, Gene, I appreciate your call. One more here, New York, Shira in Williamsville. Shira, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've been very active in this local movement, and I think what differentiates us from past movements is this amazing ability to communicate very quickly through different webs we have set up all over social media, all over the country. So, for example, the travel ban came in, and within minutes, people all over the country were alerted, were ready to go to local airports, protests with thousands and thousands of people, and that gives us a lot of power, this new communication that no social movement before has had.
Shira, how does that power compare to the power of, let's say, a Fox News amplifying conservative messages?
Well, that's certainly something that happens as well, but we and that is problematic. Not even Fox News, the fake news is a real problem out there, and they can amplify the message, but we have the ability to get at people and to mobilize people, and I think that people supporting President Trump have been shocked and dismayed. You know, we started off being called precious snowflakes so they could dismiss us, and now all of a sudden we're radical left-wingers being funded by Soros. We're neither of those things, but I think that shows that this power that we have to mobilize is working. That all of a sudden, what turned from just dismissing us is turning to trying to be afraid of what we're doing because we love our country, we love our democracy, and we're not going to let it go down.
Sure, I appreciate your call very much. All right, Ezra Levin, you hear a range of responses there. You heard what Taylor's had to say, and Vanessa Williamson looking at your movement. Pick those pieces up. And one is, Vanessa says there's a more consolidated kind of media support structure on the right than you've got. And then there's the issue of whether these movements like yours, Indivisible, will be embraced more broadly by, I don't know, the Democratic Party, mainstream Democrats, and turned into real action organizations beyond protest.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a lot of great points being made here. I think the proof ultimately is going to be in the pudding, whether or not this is sustainable and whether or not it has impact. What I will say is we have the opportunity to taste a little bit of that pudding next week. Next week is the very first congressional recess of this Congress. Recess is another word for your member of Congress coming back home.
Yep.
They're coming back to the state, coming back to the district. And this is a time when normally they hold town halls, when they're meeting with constituents. If you go to indivisibleguide.com and plug in your zip code, you can find an event near you and a group near you. We expect there to be thousands of these meetings happening next week. And what the model is here, to give some respect to Taylor, is the Tea Party's August 2009 town halls. That was during congressional recess when a lot of members came back home, and
yep.
Those members heard from their constituents. We expect the exact same thing to happen next week. And look, We're willing to be proven wrong, but we see a huge amount of energy out there. So I would really keep an eye on that. Go to indivisibleguy.com, find a group near you or an event near you, and we'll all wait and see.
Taylor, what's your advice? Maybe you don't want to give it because it's not your politics. But what's your advice to progressives right now?
Well, you know, in your intro, you called the Tea Party an anti-Obama movement, and I don't agree with that. Though I think the
well, you can say that, but I was there and I listened. I mean, I just try and call it like
no,
I
but
see
it was against his policies, and that's why Democrats lost across the board. I mean, there was only one president. There was plenty of legislators at the state and federal level that were defeated. So it was the policies that lost. And that's going to be the struggle, I think, with this anti-Trump movement is, I mean, Vanessa referenced the vast numbers that the anti-Trump movement has shown so far, unlike what we saw from the Tea Party. But Nate Silver at 538 did an analysis of the Women's March. 80% of the protesters were from states that Clinton won, where if you look back in 2009, 58% of the Tea Party protests were in states that Obama won. So a large amount of these protesters are already being represented by presidential electors or senators or members of Congress that agree with them on the policies. They're just a minority right now. And so there has to be a change of the issue matrix on the left that brings it more into the mainstream, because as of right now, it's been pushed so far to the left.
Hillary won the popular count. Doesn't that mean there's some resonance here with
the
numbers of Americans?
Well, yeah, but the competition, Tom, as you know, the competition wasn't a popular election. It was on the Electoral College. So, I mean, you know, that's like saying the Falcons won because they got the most rushing yards. Well, it wasn't based on who got the most rushing yards, or else Tom Brady probably wouldn't be in the Super Bowl because he's known for his passing. So
pardon me, Taylor, but my time is so short. Yeah. Vanessa, any reason that progressives can't ultimately use this kind of dynamic to success, however you define it, or are they cut off somehow?
Well, I think it depends, you know, where people channel their energies, right? And in particular, the question for me that's really important is what happens at the state level. I mean, there's definitely congressional elections and those really matter. But right now, state legislatures and governorships are very strongly in Republican hands. So I think that's where you'll see in the next few years whether the power of the left can actually be put into practice.
Well, this has been really interesting, and it's still very early days. Vanessa Williamson in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution, thank you very much for being with us today, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Taylor Butterwich at the Tea Party Express in Sacramento. Taylor, thank you for joining us. Come again.
Thank you so much. And thanks, Ezra and Vanessa and John, for all joining.
Yeah, and Ezra Levin, heading up one of those at the Indivisible. Thank you, Ezra.
Great chatting, Tom.
Up it goes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.